اللي سجنين لنا ما يتغير مش حاسين ولا نور الا سياج منها احنا شايفين سما لونا ازرق غيمة ابيض بالنص جمال زكراك انت بغير انا صامت عايش متفائل ما تعزل مني الامل بيجي دار فاصل السوري دور انا مربوط فلسطين كجنين لحبل الطابور بالارض جذور شجر زيتون ضل يتولد وتجدد وتجدد خصور والغصن ممدود للسلام والغصن معروض لاحتلال ما يريد استسلام ليه انا اللي ما اله حرية لاني انا رافض اني اعيش بعبودية
وين ما رفت نشوف حدود سجن الانساني لأطفال العالم حرة وانا مالي حرية وين ما رفت نشوف حدود سجن الانساني لأطفال العالم حرة وانا مالي حرية
احنا بندور على السلام بين قوات حرب رواد حرم هم صرنا اولاد حرب نطلب الحرية من
I don't have freedom by them. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Nermeen Sheikh with Amy Goodman. We turn now to Senegal, which is in the midst of its worst political upheaval in decades after President Macky Sall postponed this month's election. More than 200 opposition politicians and protesters have been arrested in recent days, and the government has cut off some internet access. Meanwhile, civil society and opposition groups are calling for a mass mobilization against the delay to the presidential poll. President Sall, whose second term was due to expire in early April, postponed the February 25th vote, citing an electoral dispute between the parliament and the judiciary regarding some of the candidates. Earlier this week, lawmakers voted to postpone the elections until December. The decision paves the way for Sall to remain in office until at least the end of the year. Opposition leaders and candidates rejected the decision, calling it a coup. Senegal has never experienced a coup since gaining independence from France in 1960. Foreign ministers from the West Africa bloc, known as ECOWAS, are due to meet for emergency talks today about the crisis. For more, we're joined by two guests. Mamadou Diouf is a professor of African Studies and the director of the Institute for African Studies at Columbia University, where he joins us from. And joining us from Abidjan in the Ivory Coast is Ousmane Diallo, senior researcher for Senegal and the Sahel at the Amnesty International Office for West and Central Africa. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! I'd like to begin with you, Ousmane Diallo, if you could respond to this latest news and your assessment of why it is that President Sall has postponed the elections.
I think President Sall has postponed the elections for very personal reasons that are mainly linked to probably dealings within his political party. And what has shocked many Senegalese citizens, whether they are politicians or simple citizens going about their daily activities, is the unilateral way in which elections that were due 3 weeks from now were delayed to December by using force, such as pushing out opposition MPs from the National Assembly chamber on Monday in order to vote for the election, for the delay of the elections. Furthermore, this is just the latest episode in a string of human rights abuses and violations in Senegal. We have seen that the internet access via mobile data was cut off between Sunday and Wednesday morning, and that many protesters were arrested. But since March 2021, at least 56 people were killed while participating in protests in Senegal, and we have around 1,000 people detained in various prisons of the country for participating in elections or calling to protest. So this is a really a downslide in Senegal, a democratic and human rights backsliding. And I think what has irked many citizens about the decision that was announced on Saturday is that this is the latest red line in which the Republican and Democratic standings of the country is being compromised by none other than the President of the Republic.
I wanted to go to the former Senegalese Prime Minister, Aminata Touré. Democracy Now! Reached her last night. On Sunday, she was detained for 6 hours before being released. This is what she had to say.
I was a candidate myself, and according to the law, there is three ways of collecting sponsorship. You can collect a certain number of parliamentarian or mayor, or you go to what is called the citizen sponsorship, which means you have to collect between 44,000 and 58,000 signatures from voters, which I have done because I led Macky Sall's legislative election list 2 years ago, so I know how to collect this sponsorship, which I have done. And when we came for the control, I mean, it was a foul play. They couldn't find, they said, 13,000 of my sponsors in the file. I came with the evidence and tell them, here they are in the 2022 file, but they didn't want to hear anything. Macky Sall decided that I would not be a candidate. But before that, last year, he removed me forcibly from the parliament, which is never you know, and heard of. On Sunday, I mean, I went to the rally, and the minute I stepped out of my car, I was picked up by the police, and I spent, you know, hours being arrested, and they released me without telling me what was wrong, what are the charges, because there were none. And that's the case for thousands of young kids who were protesting in the past months. They are in jail. They're not, you know, they don't have a court day. And this is a mess because we are not used to this. I mean, Senegal is known as the most stable democracy in West Africa. And here is President Macky Sall who's spoiling it. And then we would not let him go. We would not just sit and watch. We will take the street. We will do whatever we need to do to keep the foundation of our democracy solid.
Again, that's the former Senegalese prime minister who was arrested on Sunday for 6 hours, spoke to Democracy Now! Yesterday, Aminata Touré, in Dakar, Senegal. We want to bring Professor Mamadou Diouf into this conversation, speaking to us from Columbia University. Hundreds of people have been arrested in the last days, but this isn't the beginning of the unrest on the ground. Can you respond to what Prime Minister Sall has done and take us back in time, put this in a context back to 1960 when Senegal became an independent nation headed by Léopold Senghor?
Thank you for having me. And it's true that if you want to understand what is happening right now, we have to put it in perspective and have a kind of long-dure approach. Since independence, what has happened in Senegal is basically the fact that a political system was created using the resources of the colonial and actually the resources also of Islam, the kind of pre-colonial culture which allowed the Senegalese political class to build on the colonial foundation of a state I called an Islamo world of state, a state in which you have segment of a population who had been able to build a power base and keep negotiating one with the other. And it's what the political science, the British political scientist Donald Cruz O'Brien called the Senegalese success story based on a kind of social contract. It did not mean that the country was fully democratic, but it was a country in which you had a kind of open society, engagement between different groups, and possibility always to find a solution to the biggest crises. And I think it's what made Senegal a kind of exception. But what we have experiencing since the president Macky Sall was elected is the unraveling of the system. The fact that he has been attacking what has been the basis of the stability of the country. And the turning point basically is when he was re-elected in 2019, he just began planning a possible third term. And that planning is absolutely evident if you look at all his action from 2019. Unfortunately for him, the Senegalese society, this very resourceful society, has been able to resist a third term. And he was soundly defeated by the mobilization of the youth, who had been able to say, we want this regime to respect the constitution. And the fight for the constitution forced Macky Sall and his group to finally give up the idea of a third term. But he has been keeping, if you want, an approach which is very repressive, which is unknown in Senegal, an approach of centralization, an approach of actually jailing people, in particular his main opponent. And this is the term of a process which is a process of systematic destruction of the foundation of one of the few democratic systems in Africa.
Diouf, I'd like you to, elaborate on why that's the case. I mean, in this moment, there are people who are speculating that there may actually be some kind of military coup in Senegal. Senegal is, of course, as you said, an exception, considered an exception, the only country in West Africa that has not experienced a military coup. So first of all, do you think that there is a risk that that might happen? And also, what differentiates Senegal in this sense, the relationship of the military to the government compared to its neighbors?
Yeah, according actually to many scholars who have been paying attention, in particular to the military group in West Africa, what they have shown is that the Senegalese military is a very professionalized group, and it's a well-educated group who had been really favored by all the regime since Senghor. And in many cases, times of crises, we know the military did intervene in the process of, in the dialogue process, in the search of a kind of compromise, but without always avoiding taking power. And I think that they are still in the same disposition. In 1962, for example, when Senghor was in conflict with the Prime Minister Mamadou Dia, though the army actually supported Senghor, they did say that politicians should solve the issue, that the army was not going to intervene. And I think that is what is going to happen if the crisis deepens. They will probably say, okay, this is a situation in which the question is not the army taking over, but the army will make sure that the right solution is found. What has changed, again, with President Macky Sall, is today what is called the military police, the gendarmerie in French, is much better equipped, probably, than the army. And it's a gendarmerie equipped for repression. And, you know, these last 12 years, Macky Sall has invested more in repressive equipment than in education and health.
Ousmane Diallo, we just have a minute. I want to go back to you in the Ivory Coast. You're with Amnesty International, particularly focusing on human rights. I want to ask you about the targeting of journalists and media under Sahle, and particularly one private TV station losing its license after showing protests on the ground, internet being cut off, difficult to reach people on the ground. The significance of all of this and where you see the next election happening.
I think those attacks against the press that have occurred over the last 3 years are very symbolic of the repression against independent voices in Senegal. So just on this Tuesday, the broadcasting license of the TV station Walfadjiri was withdrawn by the Minister of Telecommunications, who criticized them for covering the protest on Sunday. And this is a very symbolic attack because Walf TV is one of the first private media houses in Senegal. And we know that private media houses such as Walfadjiri and Sud FM have been key in opening up the democratic voices and paving the way to political change in 2000 and 2012. And beyond that, I think what has been very hurtful towards Senegalese peoples and their rights have been the recurrent suspension of internet access via mobile data. So this has happened in between Sunday and Wednesday. It had happened in June 2023. It had happened in March 2021. And every time that there are protests in Senegal, this has become a regular feature of the repression of the regime. And if you look at international texts and rulings by the ECOWAS Court of Justice regarding the case of Togo, they have been very clear that this suspension of access to internet are attacks against right to information and press freedom. And I think in a general way, the press has been attacked and have been the victim of repression by the current regime, and as well has been all of the institutions. Professor Diouf has talked about the army, which has been under stress, but also the Constitutional Court, whose rulings are final according to the Senegalese constitutions, but whose legitimacy has been has been criticized and undermined by the actions of the president. And I think all of those contribute to the current stress, the anger, and the mobilization that we are seeing among the Senegalese citizenry.
Thank you so much, Ousmane Diallo. We will continue to follow the story. Amnesty International Senior Researcher for Senegal and the Sahel and Professor Mamadou Diouf, a professor of African Studies and director of the Institute for African Studies at Columbia University. And the next, a new Oscar-nominated film follows young Senegalese migrants on their journey from West Africa to Italy. We'll speak with the director and the person who was part of the inspiration for Io Capitano. Back in 20 seconds. Capitano by Andrea Fari, featuring Seydou Sarr. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. I'm Nermeen Sheikh with Amy Goodman. We end today's show with the new Oscar-nominated film, Io Capitano, which follows young Senegalese migrants on their journey from West Africa to Italy. This is the trailer.
We want to go to Europe. Stop counting. Think about your becoming a big star. White people will be asking for your autographs.
Mom, I have to tell you something.
You have to stay here and breathe the same air as me.
you lost your mind? The guide is leaving. If we lose him, we'll die in a desert for sure.
We're in Libya. Give us your money or it's jail.
I'm scared. I won't see my mom again. I want to see her to ask her to forgive me.
If you pilot the boat, you can both leave for the price of one.
I've never done that. I don't even know how to swim. You want to let us die here, in the middle of the sea?
The trailer for Io Capitano, which is up for an Oscar for Best Foreign Film. We're joined now by the film's award-winning director, Matteo Garrone, as well as Mamadou Kouassi, whose journey as an African migrant to Europe is the basis for Io Capitano. Welcome to you both to Democracy Now! Matteo Garrone, congratulations on this absolutely beautiful film. If you could begin by explaining the inspiration for the film and your decision to tell this story of migrants from the perspective of the migrants themselves rather than from the perspective of a European country receiving them, which is what films on migrants have all done, so far as I know.
Yeah, well, first of all, thanks for inviting us. And we decide to tell this story starting from the idea to make a sort of reverse shot. So to put the camera instead than as we usually see on the news from our point of view, we are habit and used to in Europe, in Italy, to see only the last part of the journey, when the boat arriving in Sicily and when they succeed to arrive in Sicily, because as we know, in the last 15 years, 27,000 people have died making this journey. So we are used to see always this ritual count of numbers, you know, people alive, how many people are alive, how many people are dead. And with time, we get used that are just number. So we wanted to try to humanize this number. We wanted to try to give to the audience the possibility to live the experience of the journey from the point of view of them. So finally, to give visual form to a part of the journey that we don't see. That's what that pushed us to make this movie. And making this movie, for me, that I'm Italian, was crucial and fundamental to do it with them. So I've been a sort of intermediator. I work since the beginning on the script with the people that for real made this journey, and also on the set, and also on the trailer that you have seen, all the extra that are behind the actor are real migrants that made this journey. So on the set, they helped me to recreate this odyssey, because they are the carriers of the contemporary epic. So they recreate this modern odyssey with me, trying to be authentic, trying to be true for the respect of the people that made this journey, for the respect of the people that died on this journey, and for the help of the people that will see this movie, especially in Africa, and maybe will be aware about the risk that is going through.
Let's go to another clip from this epic film, Io Capitano. This is the star, Sedu, who's speaking with his cousin about thinking about leaving Senegal.
So when you said you wanted to leave, it wasn't a load of crap? You weren't serious. Look at me. You're scared. It's not that. Admit it. Not at all. Come on, say it. So what's the point?
Yes, I'm scared.
You see? Okay, Sedu, you don't want to do this anymore. 6 months we've been preparing. We did so much work to be able to go. And our dreams, I'm not going without you.
Me neither.
So now what? Europe is waiting for us. Think about your becoming a big star. White people will be asking for your autographs. You'll go on stage like a real star. What do you think? Give me a smile. Smile.
So that's a clip from Io Capitano, and it takes you on this epic journey from Senegal through the desert, across the sea to Italy. Sedu is actually based on the life, though not Senegalese, from the Ivory Coast, of Mamadou Kouassi, who is also in the studio. Mamadou, if you can talk about what it means to have put your journey into this film that is now nominated for an Oscar that will be seen around the world, why you left your country and took this perilous journey to Europe.
Yeah, as you have already seen, thank you very much for this invitation. And this film is talking about dream that me and my cousin, we get access to the to know what is going on at that part of the world. For example, we were students. We know we learn a little bit about Europe. We study in the books. We saw it in television. So we found that it is important to discover what has been seen to us in television, in the newspapers about Europe, that Europe is a country of right, of human right. So, and even at the same time, a country of dream, that there you can dream, you can achieve your dream. So me and my cousin, we walk and we decide to travel. But the only possibility to travel for us is to cross the desert, because for us it is difficult to get a visa to travel. So we took some information from some people, knowing that to get the visa is very difficult. Even to get the appointment in the embassy is sometimes more difficult. So we decided to afford the journey across the desert. And when we start the journey, we saw that we did a mistake. It's like a circle. As soon as you enter, it's difficult to go back. And we see that it was harder to cross the desert, because there you will see many people that are dying. Some ladies, boys, people are dying. You will see dead bodies, and you cannot even go back. You will discover the reality, the suffering of a human being, and not only on the desert. When you arrive in the transit countries like Libya, what you have seen on the movie is true reality, that we have been sold there like slaves, we have been tortured in the prison, people are dying in number, and people are obliged to take the inflatable boat also to cross the Mediterranean Sea, and there, at the same time, people are dying. And so for us, this film has given us opportunity also to express ourselves, to bring this reality all over the world, because people are talking, but they don't know before that people entering in Europe, number of people died on the desert, in the Mediterranean Sea, in the prison, people are being sold. Till today, people are suffering in this part of the country. So this film is for us a big instrument to share this information to the world, to the huge public, to know what African people are suffering before they arrive in Europe. Io Capitano, I think, is the huge instrument to send this message to the world that things have to be changed.
Mamadou Kouassi, we are going to continue this conversation and post it on democracynow.org. Mamadou Kouassi, whose journey as an African migrant to Europe is the basis for the new film, Io Capitano, and Matteo Garrone, the film's director. Democracy Now! Is currently accepting applications for a major gift officer. Learn more and apply at democracynow.org. I am Nermeen Sheikh, joined with Amy Goodman.
From now until April 6, 2024, at the Western Front Gallery in Vancouver, get involved in the solo exhibition Feral Domestic by Danny and Sheila Restack, featuring a multi-channel installation of the video trilogy Feral Domestic and the three artist books of drawings, writings, and images. Admission is free, and more information can be found by visiting the Western Front website westernfront.ca or by calling 604-876-9343 for more information.
You're listening to